Welcome to another segment of Rising Stars of Turf, presented by Earthworks and Dryject. Our victim today is Rob Monroe, Assistant Superintendent at Cabot Cliffs in Inverness, Nova Scotia, currently rated the number one golf course in Canada. Welcome, Rob.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Peter. I'm happy to be here.
Well, you and I have not crossed paths before, and your participation here comes at the suggestion of Lee Strutt.
Yes.
Who is your director of agronomy now, I guess. I contacted Lee out of courtesy because I originally wanted to talk to Jason Haynes, which I did yesterday. And he said, and I will quote, I don't want to blow your head apart right from the start, but he says, "I consider the rising star at Cabot to be Rob Monroe, who was named to the FTMI class of 2022. That's the big Future Turf Managers Initiative, correct?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Says he has a lot of great energy and will be a leading super in the future for all the right reasons.
Oh, those are big. Those are big words for sure. But if Lee and I get along great, it's awesome working for him. He supports everyone here, and it's great to have someone with that kind of experience here. And working with him is awesome.
Now, you're a native of British Columbia.
Yes.
And so you actually followed much of the same path there, but before Jason Haynes did, I guess he followed you. And you went to Olds College in Alberta.
Yeah, that's right.
How'd you get into the industry?
Yeah, so it's kind of a funny story where my dad was a superintendent in Ontario, and then we moved out west from Ontario when I was about 4 years old, because he was building a golf course in Duncan, British Columbia, on Vancouver Island there. So I obviously knew he was exposed to the industry that way and knew it was a thing, but I had no interest in golf as a kid, none whatsoever. He tried to put me in golf camps and all of that, and I had no part of it until I was about 14 years old. And he said, "It's time to get a summer job, Robbie. It's time to get your butt in gear.
Get serious."
And he was pretty serious. And I was like, "Well, what do you mean? I'm 14. No way. Like, none of my friends have summer jobs." And he was like, "Well, you're getting one." I said, "No, I'm not." We argued for 5 minutes. And he said, "Well, that's too bad. You start at 5:30 tomorrow at Arbutus Ridge Golf Course." And I got there and I ended up loving it. I had a great first day. I had a great first season. And then really it was all in the books from there.
And where was that?
That was at Arbutus Ridge Golf Course. So that's in Cobble Hill, kind of 45 minutes north of Victoria.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you cut your teeth there and then you went on to intern at Capilano?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I guess I did 3 years at Arbutus Ridge. And in the off seasons, I worked at a restaurant in Duncan there in town. And I really disliked it, honestly. I was not a fan of working in the restaurants. And I couldn't help but thinking how much I loved working on the golf course. And I was like, well, if I'm going to love work here, I may as well just do it forever. Like my dad did it. It's an option. And he was friends already with Jason Pick at Olds College. So he kind of started the ball in motion and was like, "Hey, like, if you want to pursue this as a career, like, it's about time you start choosing your college courses anyway." So we went from there, and I did my first year at Olds College. And then I went back to Arbutus Ridge for a fourth season. And then when I went back for my second year at Olds, I heard that Capilano was offering an internship. And again, at the advice of my dad, he was like, he had mentioned a whole bunch of people he had known that had worked at Capilano in the past and where they were now, and said, "Hey, like, this could be a really great opportunity for you." And I went, and being the club that it is, high ranked. And when you talk about a well-oiled machine for a turf crew, Capilano is, they know what they're doing over there. So to go to that and to be a part of that whole system there, and also being at Arbutus Ridge and being able to compare and contrast between semi-private, public kind of feel, compared to the fully private and very, very prestigious country club feel, was really cool. It was really cool, especially when I was 19. I think that was young to do that, and it totally shaped the way I think about the golf course even here.
So Olds College was a 2-year program.
So it was a 4-year program, with the first two being a diploma, and then the third and fourth being for a degree, bachelor applied science.
Okay.
Degree. Yeah.
So at Capilano, you worked under Stu Sheridan.
Yes, I did. Yes, Stu and Stu Sheridan and Nick Daly was the assistant there. Both great guys.
And that springboarded you to be able to throw your hat in the ring at Cabot.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. It was, it's funny how it all goes full circle where, again, I guess the springboard you could say was the cost of living in Vancouver is pretty crazy about now. And I guess I was 21 at that point. And 21 and with the rent being what it was and the car insurance being what it was getting to the point where I was kind of like, well, I should start thinking about making a move. And also the big city life, it was new to me. And I was kind of, I don't know how you say, I guess the city wasn't really my thing. I loved work, for sure. I loved being at Capilano every day. But otherwise the traffic drove me crazy. So there's certain things where I was in Vancouver where I was like, okay, well, maybe it's not quite for me. And I wanted to go to Revelstoke actually, because I'd heard about Cabot Revelstoke. So I'd called some people around that I knew. And eventually I got the rumor that Brad Allen was going to be the superintendent at Cabot Revelstoke down the line. So I looked him up on Twitter, and he tweeted that day that he was looking for a second assistant at Cabot Cliffs. And I was like, well, that would be kind of cool. And my roommate, Denver Hart, who's one of the superintendents down at PGA West now, he said, well, hey, like, I've been out to Cabot. It's a really cool living situation. It's an awesome golf course. And as a second assistant, like, you may as well throw your name in the hat. It was peak COVID at the time. So I kind of thought, well, hey, like, maybe now's the time to make a move. Not many people are moving. So you never know. Maybe I'll get a stab at it. And I talked to Jason Zibel and Brad Allen, and I got the job and drove coast to coast in my 2006 Pontiac Pursuit. It managed to drag it across the country one way or another, in full COVID, which was an experience in itself. And it brought me out here and to a little town, Inverness, which is the opposite of Vancouver in a lot of ways, in a lot of nice, refreshing ways. And yeah, and that's how I kind of came out to the East Coast.
Were you able to penetrate the Atlantic bubble or whatever the heck they called it at the peak of COVID?
Oh man, it was something. I had to apply to enter the Atlantic bubble when I left BC. So a month before, or 2 weeks before, I guess. And I had to enter on that exact date. So I drove across the country and stayed with some friends that I had from college and checked out a lot of cool golf courses on the way, actually. And then, but by the time I got to Quebec, like, I ended up in Quebec City and I was like, man, I have 5 days until I'm supposed to enter Nova Scotia. Like, I have to just find a way to kill this time. So I explored a lot of Montreal. I explored a lot of Quebec City. Obviously I couldn't do anything because everything was closed, but I walked around, explored cities, which I really like doing. And then when I entered New Brunswick, I had to go straight to my quarantine place, which was Brad Allen's parents' house, which they were away for 2 weeks or something like that. And I got there to quarantine for 2 weeks because you had to do that when you enter the Atlantic bubble. It was a 2 week quarantine period. And it was in Pugwash, Nova Scotia. And I got there and I called them and asked for the Wi-Fi password. And they're like, oh no, there's no Wi-Fi there. And obviously I'm 21. So I was like, oh man, like, how am I going to live here for 2 weeks stuck in? But they had cable TVs better than I remember anyway. So it was a good time, and I was at work in no time at all, it felt like.
Yeah, for those who are not familiar, the Atlantic bubble was a COVID thing where the maritime provinces of Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island, and I guess Newfoundland, Labrador were allowed to travel amongst one another, but it was difficult going out of that. I have a cottage in southern New Brunswick, and we couldn't get there that year because the border was closed to Americans anyway. So you wind up in Nova Scotia at a club that's wall-to-wall fescue after having cut your teeth on Poa. How was that transition for you?
I mean, it's funny that I would say, like, even in turf school, we didn't talk about fine fescue once. In 4 years, we didn't talk about it once, and I didn't think about it once, to be honest. Like, I remember hearing that fescue greens existed in the UK, and I kind of thought, oh, well, that's kind of crazy. I don't know. I never really thought anything of it until I was coming out here. And I was like, oh man, like, I wonder how you even manage that. And when you look it up, like, compared to the literature on bentgrass or poa management, or any of the warm season grasses, like, there's very little to read about with fescue, really, comparatively. So I had my ideas about what it would be like, low inputs and whatnot, especially again compared to poa out west, which I had always been on. And to be fair, when I left BC, a lot of that was a big draw for me, was to work on something else other than poa. Whether it was bent or fescue or whatever, just to change it up, and to come out here and to see the difference, it really is night and day. And even just going from managing fescue to trying to get rid of, or sorry, from managing poa to trying to get rid of poa, is just turning your thinking upside down and inside out and all that. So it's been really cool, and there's a lot of quirks with it, and a lot of, I guess, pros and cons with anything, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the preponderance of fescue over in the UK. I think if you look back at North America and the European continent, at some juncture, I think they also or they split apart. So Nova Scotia is probably not a heck of a lot removed climate-wise from Scotland.
Well, it's funny. We went to another great thing, I guess, Lee Strutt does is, and I guess, to be fair, he came from the UK, and he was trying to explain all this stuff to us, about the things that he knows and his experience. And it's funny, we talk about it. There's a bit of a language barrier where sometimes he says things and Jason and I have no idea what he's talking about, just in the colloquialisms that he'll use. And whatnot. So he actually took us out to Scotland to do
Really?
this course tour and meet all the superintendents and to see what they do, to kind of see how we can translate it over here. I mean, we're trying to provide a Lynx feel out here in Canada, and if you've never seen it, it's kind of hard to replicate when you've only seen pictures. So we went out there, and it is amazing. Cape Breton compared to Scotland, if you didn't know where you were, sometimes you would think you were in Scotland out here, just looking at the scenery. Or, like, I think the first day when we came back from Scotland, I went right to Inverness Beach, and it's extremely similar, a little colder, I guess.
I would imagine, yes. So compared to your prior experience, what has surprised you perhaps about the turf management strategies at Cabot?
I guess when you think of fescue, you think low input. And to be honest, like, sure, maybe per square foot, the input is way lower, you're using way less water and whatnot, and overall less fertilizer. But the area is so massively huge. Like, the greens are 8 acres. It's 88 acres of fairways. Like, it takes 4 fairway mowers 2 days to mow the fairways. So, like, just in general, it's like it's low input, but when you times it by 15, it sure doesn't feel very low input. Like, you're still grinding out there to get what you need done. It's no easy feat. Fescue doesn't spread laterally, so if you leave a divot unfilled, it will never ever ever grow in with anything but poa or weeds, unless you fill it with fescue seeds. So the divot mix is flowing for sure out there, and we're constantly overseeding and doing all this stuff to kind of keep it fescue over time. And on a golf course that's so busy, constantly toe to toe from morning to night golf on the nest, like, it's constant tee times and constant divots to fill. And I guess another difference is just the difference between the Link style of maintenance compared to what we were doing at Capilano, where at Capilano it was like fine manicured everything. Whereas here, some, like, the bunker faces will crumble in, and that's the look. Like, it looks windswept, it looks rough, it looks rugged, and it looks natural, but it's also, you're trying to find that balance and that line between them, and where that is sometimes gets blurred. But as you start to get into it and you've been here a little longer, you start to kind of adjust to that and know what looks the way it should and what looks natural and what is maybe like, okay, well, we need to spruce that up a bit. It's a very different mindset than the Parkland Country Club feel, but in a really cool, unique way, I guess I could say.
Having been to Ireland several times, but not being a golfer myself, I was pretty good at hoisting the Guinness back in the day. But in any case, it occurred to me then, I walked just about every course that we visited, and it occurred to me, both having viewed the golf courses, but also talked to a lot of the caddies and the golfers there, that it should be a prerequisite for any green committee member in North America to go play some golf in the UK and Ireland. Mm-hmm. And you see that, you know, these are living, breathing surfaces. It's not AstroTurf. A little bit of a little blemish here or there is absolutely fine, which,
yes.
You know.
Yes, yes. Well, it's I would say one of our big challenges is that a lot of our clientele come from Florida or somewhere like that, where they're coming from the most pristine of pristine country clubs. Right. And they're putting on Bermuda grass that rolls 13 and a half on a daily basis. And then they come up here, and if it's where we want it, it's brown, it's firm. And on a good day, where we aim for, like, we want the greens to roll like 9-6, kind of 10 foot kind of thing. And just cause they're so undulating, and on a windy day, 9 foot feels awful quick, when it's real windy out there, for sure. Mm-hmm. And that's Lynx golf. Like, you think about where the green speed is for like the Open in the UK, and it's certainly not rolling 13.
Right.
So a lot of people that will come up here and not understand that, and they'll be like, well, why is the golf course dead? A real question they'll ask, why is the golf course dead? And it's like, well, it's not dead. This is, we got it right where we want it. It looks, it's hard. It's like a solid, firm surface, and your 250-yard drive runs out to 375 yards. It's awesome. You got to play the contours. It's a it's a different game, really. Like going out to play is certainly not like playing anywhere else. There's not many places in North America where you can play true links golf, and it's pretty
cool. Do
so,
they get it after a few rounds? Do they understand what you're doing?
I think most do. I think most do. I mean, they take caddies, and the caddies get it. The caddies all play golf here, and I mean, I would say there's probably a handful, maybe 5-10% of people that just don't get it.
Not for them.
But I think it's just not for them. But I mean, once you, the first round is really tricky, because if the pin's 100 yards away and they play it 100 yards, you're off the green every single time, especially if there's wind. So once they kind of figure that you got to play it shorter and play the contours and run the ball up and maybe putt from 20 feet away off the green, once they start to get that, I think they really appreciate it, that it's a different game, but a really cool game. It's the original game.
Sure.
That in North America, I think a lot of us have forgotten, or at least just haven't had the opportunity to be exposed to, which is really cool and unique to be out here for sure.
How's your staffing situation, recruitment, and all that kind of thing? I see that you hosted a first green thing for the kids, correct?
Yeah, we did. We did. I mean, I would assume when you talk to other superintendents and assistants and whatnot, I assume when you ask that question, you get a lot of the same answer, where it is really difficult right now in general. Across the board, it's hard for everyone. I think out here, the unique situation that we're in is that there's not many people in Inverness, really. There's 1,500 people here. It's hard to get to. The nearest airport's 4 hours away. The staff accommodation is growing, but this is the first year where we've had a real serious demand for everything. Like, the traffic we're getting here from guests is way more than anything we've ever experienced. So, and it's really, Cabot Links opened in 2011. So it's really, the whole resort is in its infancy, if you think about it. It's very new, and we're catching up to a lot of this stuff, but the staffing is really hard to come by. Like I said, there's not many people out here. And when you compare it to caddying, like, the caddies make real good money out there. They make real big tips, and it's hard to compete with. So a lot of good potential candidates, I guess, are drawn to caddying, and fair enough, it's a great job and you get to play golf and all that. But I think it comes down to what we're doing and how we can promote ourselves and how we can grow our own staff that are here. The good thing we have going for us is we have a lot of core staff that have been here since the beginning. A lot of the guys, local guys that built the golf course, are still here, and they know all the tasks we do really well. So when we bring in new people, we have a good core group of guys to kind of lead those new people into it and teach them how we do things around here. But I think the staffing situation, as we really focus on it, which we have been, one of Lee's big focuses is staffing, and rightfully so. And I think we're growing and getting better every year. So while it's difficult as it is, I think we're on the upswing, and we're only going to get better for sure.
That was one of the challenges that I was aware of, was just the size of the town there. I think
it's so small.
Probably doubled the size of the, with the Cabot people, you probably doubled the size of the town, I would think.
Easily. It's pretty small in the winter. Once the course closes, it's pretty quiet. A lot of the restaurants close for the winter. We go from like 5 restaurants in town to 2. And even on Saturday night, the Wits Pub in town, which is the main bar in town, I guess, you go in at 9 on Saturday night, and you and your friend might be the only ones there in the winter. But
they're putting the chairs up on the tables at that point, right?
Yeah, that's right. But the men's league hockey's good, and there's always something to do if you're looking for it, I guess.
Are you a player?
Yeah, I try
You
my
own a
best.
pair of skates anyway, right?
That's right.
I was back in the day, but back
Yeah.
in the 60s when that was
Real hockey,
was
old
almost
school.
a cult. It was almost a cult sport back
Yeah.
then. I grew up in New Jersey, and there was only one high school team in the entire state back
Okay.
then. Yeah, so.
I guess especially down south below the border, it would be a cult sport for sure.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with the Golf Course Hockey Challenge, which you probably heard about
I have.
in the Niagara area. Yeah, we TurfNet took a team there for 22 years, I think.
That's a great initiative. I love the idea of that. Like all the superintendents come together. In Alberta, they do that really well. They have a golf course tournament with all the courses in the area, and they do really well. And I mean, in Alberta, hockey's basically a religion. In the prairies in general, I think every single person I ever met in the prairies plays hockey. So.
Well, the thing about the hockey challenge in Niagara that was cool, it's not all, well, it's superintendents, assistants, and suppliers. But I always used to say that, everybody's got three common threads. They play hockey, they work in golf, and they drink beer. And
Yeah,
not necessarily in that order.
that's right.
What's next for you?
My big thing is so this winter, my goal is to travel. I think there's a real benefit, especially in our industry where it's so based on location and the biodiversity in your specific region, same as Vancouver Island is very different than Cape Breton Island.
Sure.
I think traveling is really important and something everyone should try and do. So this winter I'm gonna go to New Zealand and just work on a golf course out there.
Really?
And then as spring comes around, we'll see where that leads me. But I think traveling is really important. So I'd love to travel. And then when I come back to Canada, maybe keep working out here and see where we go. I mean, it's a continuing journey, right? Like you never know where it's going to take you. So the
How
more
long has
experience
Cliffs been
anyway.
open?
Cliffs has been open since 2016.
And you've been there, you said this is your third season.
Yeah, that's right.
So what advice would you have to your peers or others up and coming or thinking about getting into the industry?
There's a few things that are really important. I think first and foremost, it's really important to be yourself. And as cliche as that sounds, and it totally is cliche, but it's really easy to get caught up in being not yourself, especially once you get into management and you start to be this commander, dictator thing, because you're calling the shots a lot of times, and it's easy to get caught up in it sometimes or become really real stern or someone that you're not. And I think at the end of the day, you got to let your personality shine through. I think that's the difference between some of the best leaders I've ever worked with. They're not afraid to joke around with you and have some fun, but at the same time, when it's time to be serious, they can make that transition. The big thing for anyone from a learning perspective is to just ask questions constantly. I know the biggest thing I learned in Olds College was how to ask questions and the right questions. And that's how the whole program was based. It was all based on having the right conversations and where to go with them and how to learn more than anything. So anyone that wants to really learn should develop their question asking skills for sure. Because there's a lot of great knowledge in the turf industry. And a lot of people are either too afraid to ask the questions or they don't know what questions to ask.
As I've sort of monitored and managed the TurfNet forum over the last 30 years, I've intentionally made myself look stupid by asking questions that I legitimately wanted to know the answer and didn't know the answer. But I was sure that there would be dozens of other guys out there thinking the same thing, but didn't
Absolutely.
necessarily have the courage to raise their hand, or
Well, it
they
takes
didn't want
courage,
to
right?
embarrass themselves publicly or whatever.
Well, it takes courage, but and it feels like you might embarrass yourself, but at the end of the day, like No one cares. Everyone learns from it.
They have the
You
answer.
walk away and you walk away on top at the end of the day, right? Like you come out with the knowledge you came to learn, and that's super important, I think.
How about the value of mistakes, both as somebody who's learning and how you would handle that as a manager?
I'll tell you a story about a mistake I made on the golf course. It was my first season back from college at Arbutus Ridge. And the first thing I told the superintendent was, I need to get on a sprayer. I need to learn how to spray.
Said the first guy ever.
Said the first guy ever, absolutely. And when I think about it now as a manager, like I'm like, oh my God, how did he let me on a sprayer? Anyway, I got on the sprayer. He taught me how to spray fairways. And I think I sprayed fairways once or twice before he got me on the greens. And he was superintendent, no assistant that year. So I think part of it was he was desperate for someone to help him with the spraying. He was getting married that summer. So he went away on his honeymoon and he said, Rob, I need you to spray the greens on July 20th or whatever it was. And this is what you're going to spray. This is the sheet. And I was like, okay, cool. I think I can do that. I was super intimidated by it, but I didn't let that on. So July 20th came around and I got on the sprayer and put everything that was on that list in the tank. And I went and sprayed the greens, and golf was really on my tail that day. I should add, it was like 3 days before the club championship.
Oops.
Anyway, golf was really on me. The foamer wasn't working very well. And I did my pass and turned around and I was like, man, like, I don't really know where I've been on the screen. The golf is on the fairway right there. I better just do the next pass. So I did the next pass and whatever. And there was no chemical in the tank. It was all fertilizer. So I figured, I was like, oh, well, nothing bad's going to happen, right? So I did my thing, finished the greens, whatever. And one of the older guys who was kind of leading the crew while the superintendent was away came to me later and he was like, Rob, you better go out to 11 Green and have a look at it. And this was like 3 hours after I sprayed it. I was like, what? Like, no way. So I went out there and it was like racing stripes, dark green, light green. And I was so freaked out by it. I was like, oh my God, like, what am I going to tell the superintendent when he comes back? And it looked like that for a while. And it turned out there was a lot of iron in the tank is what it was. And that's how I learned what iron does to grass, was by definitely double spraying it and then missing and then double spraying because I was in a rush and I wasn't taking my time. But for one, I learned on a sprayer, you can't just wing it. Like you got to know what you're doing for sure all the time and be really cautious. And like I said, it was right before the club championship. And when the superintendent came back, to be honest, he didn't even talk to me about it. He knew I knew what had happened. And then I think we talked about it like a month later and he was like, well, do you know what iron does to turf now? And I was like, I sure do. And I never forgot it. And at the end of the day, it was funny. The head pro came out to look at it because the superintendent wanted to talk to him before the club championship. And he thought they were just mowing stripes. He didn't even know what he was looking at. So also a lesson that sometimes the things that you think are a really big deal, maybe not everyone can thinks it's as big a deal as you might.
I was wondering whether you got the handgun out to go out, maybe touch up those lighter areas.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, it was a whole thing. And as a kid, I was really freaked out by it. But at the end of the day, I didn't kill anything. So that's a win, I suppose. But yeah, a good lesson to learn for sure.
Sun comes up tomorrow.
Yep, that's right.
One thing I wanted to ask you about is the being a part of the management staff at Cabot. One thing Jason Haynes mentioned that he found to be extremely valuable and exciting was to have other guys of such quality to be able to sit face to face and pick their brains and bounce ideas and all that kind of stuff, having come from almost a single person management thing when he was at Pender Harbor. How's that been for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's been great, especially as someone with less experience than all those guys. It's like, if I have a question, maybe there's four other people in that room that can help me out with it, for sure. Here, there's two golf courses. What's happening at the Cliffs isn't necessarily what's happening at the links. What Jason's doing at the links with the clipping volume and the growth forecasting is totally different than what we're doing up here. So to see him do that down there and then to compare it to what we're doing up here is really cool. Really cool. It's the same kind of grass, both fescue, different construction. So I guess that's a difference. But really, you can.
How
you can
far apart are the two courses?
Like 2 miles. Not very far. Not very far at all.
Are you on a dune sand base?
So three of our greens are completely dune sand. All the way down, you could dig forever and it's dune sand, which is a challenge in itself. But the other ones are are capped, sand capped. Where down on the links, none of them are sand capped. They're just push up. So very different, but also just how they're managing it is so different than what we're doing up here. And to see it is just unique. And I certainly appreciate a lot of what he's doing and down there. And for someone that's never seen it, like that's so different than what a lot of people are doing. I think the industry is going that way in a lot of ways with the data you can collect from it and the benefits you see from it. And I mean, Jason has helped to write the book on that whole thing. He's a very integral piece of that. So to see it on fescue is interesting.
Well, the key with collecting data and having data at your disposal is doing something with it.
And Jason is making all his turf decisions based on that, on those numbers that he's collecting. So he's certainly doing what it's meant to be used for, which I think is really cool.
Okay, let's slam the lid on this episode of Rising Stars of Turf presented by Earthworks and Dryject. Rob, we're going to send you a box of swag. So once we get over with this, I need your postal address, but that's on behalf of us and Earthworks and Dryject. Continued good fortune to you. Stay in touch. Let us know where you are. Have fun in New Zealand. That's one place in the world I might consider going to. I pretty much stopped traveling whatsoever, but that's one place I would consider going.
Yep. Their summer is our winter, so it works out perfect.
There you go. So thanks very much for your participation in this. And again, continued good fortune and best of luck.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Peter.
You bet.